grocer's fresh meat case.
And just a reminder, last day of our special Web Week experiment here at Minnesota Public Radio. And we are still, well, we need to raise about $2,100 this hour to stay on track if we're going to make our goal for this week. Up things got off to a little slow start, but plenty of time to catch up, plenty of time to get in on the drawing for the 100,000 Northwest Airlines frequent flyer miles, plenty of time to take advantage of the special offers. So all you have to do to become a member, do your part here, is to log on to our website, minnesotapublicradio.org or mpr.org if you prefer. Log on, sign up, and do your part to support good quality radio. Thank you in advance. Good morning and welcome to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Eichten. Glad you could join us. Well, it's the Independence Party's turn. Minnesota DFLers and Republicans held their state conventions earlier this month. Tomorrow, Minnesota Independence Party activists will get together at the University of St. Thomas in St. Paul for their state convention. Governor Jesse Ventura is scheduled to speak. Delegates will also be endorsing candidates for the U.S. Senate and laying the groundwork for what they hope will be a successful campaign this fall to win some seats in the Minnesota legislature. Today on Midday, we've been joined by Independence Party State Chair Rick McLuhan and key party leader Dean Barkley, and we invite you to join our conversation as well. We're talking politics this hour on Midday, specifically Independence Party politics. And if you have a comment or a question for our guests, give us a call here. Twin City area number is 651-227-6000. 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-242-2828. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Now, before we get to our callers, let's take a closer look at the main order of business facing convention delegates, namely who to endorse for the U.S. Senate seat currently held by Republican Rod Grams. Candidates may have, or delegates rather, may have as many as three candidates to choose from, and in fact, they may end up choosing more than one of the candidates. Minnesota Public Radio's Amy Radel reports.
Jim Gibson has long been the Independence Party's anointed candidate for U.S. Senate, and he's considered the likely frontrunner for the party's endorsement. He also received an early plug from Governor Jesse Ventura, which has been turned into a soundbite to be broadcast from Gibson's campaign van.
Mr. Gibson, and get his name out there. He's the best man for the job. There's no doubt in my mind about it.
Most recently, Gibson worked the crowd at a parade in the Minneapolis suburb of Brooklyn Center.
Jim 2000, take a look at
www.jim2000.
That's right.
Gibson is soft-spoken but high energy. A software developer, he says he's making his first run for public office because he got concerned that elected officials were ignoring complicated long-term problems. He crafted his agenda around what he calls intergenerational justice.
And that breaks down into making sure we pay down the national debt, deal with Social Security, make sure we have the resources so that we can educate our kids and for what is becoming an increasingly integrated and interdependent global economy, and making sure the world, environmentally, well, we leave a better place than we found it.
But Gibson has another side, one he says has proved popular with voters. He and his wife Celeste are national champions at ballroom dancing.
Well, I'll go through the various issues, and they get kind of glassy-eyed now and then, and all of a sudden, I'll mention the ballroom dancing, they perk right up, so it's a strange world, isn't it?
When the Independence Party broke from the national organization, Gibson was its only U.S. Senate candidate. More recently, the black-clad, Brooklyn-bred environmental activist, Leslie Davis, announced his intentions to run for the party endorsement. Davis, the founder of his own organization called Earth Protector, has been visible on a host of issues, including logging in northeast Minnesota and, most recently, opposing the light rail line planned for Minneapolis. He recently held an open house for party delegates in his North Minneapolis office, a former bar, where he gave tours of his voluminous paper files.
This is the animal rights box about all the animal rights issues, and we had a huge victory.
Party delegate Tom Lymond of Crystal says he disagrees with Davis on certain issues and expects Gibson to be endorsed. But he also says he admires Davis's work, calling him the Socrates of the metropolitan area.
Socrates was kind of a gadfly. He kind of made a lot of enemies, but a lot of things he said were true. And I think this is true with Leslie. An awful lot of what he says is true.
Davis dislikes being called a gadfly and instead suggests he be known as the champion of the downtrodden. Although he's a newcomer to the Independence Party and has even sued Ventura before, Davis says he'd make the best endorsed candidate because he could pull support from environmental groups as well. He says Gibson lacks his broader base.
And where's Gibson going to get the money from? I know where mine is going to come from. It's going to come from the animal rights people, the clean energy people, the environmental movement, the marijuana movement. I know where my fives and tens are going to come from. Who's going to send any money to Jim Gibson? Nice guy that he may be.
Until recently, the endorsement race was a two-way contest. Then, party vice chair Buford Johnson began hinting he's about to make his move.
I'm planning to create the crisis that'll create the innovation, that'll create the excitement that's needed in a young political party in order to become newsworthy.
Johnson, a veteran, teacher, and financial broker, resigned his Independence Party post and plans to announce his own candidacy Saturday. He says he won't seek the party's endorsement unless the rules are changed to allow multiple endorsements, which he would support. Johnson's larger ambition is to be one of three candidates running and debating until the primary, which he says will help keep the Independence Party in the public eye amidst the crowded field of Senate contenders. I'm Amy Radel, Minnesota Public Radio.
Well, once again, former Independence Party Senate candidate and Governor Ventura's 1998 campaign manager, Dean Barkley, has joined us here in the studio. And State Party Chair Rick McLuhan has joined us from Mankato this morning. And if you'd like to join our conversation about Independence Party politics, give us a call, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000, outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828. Dean Barkley, Rick McLuhan, thanks for joining us this morning.
It's nice to be here, Gary.
Hey, thanks for having us, Gary.
Mr. McLuhan, let me start with you. What's your best guess here? Are delegates likely to go to a multiple endorsement system tomorrow, endorse more than one candidate for Senate, or will they narrow it down to one?
You know, that's a good question. I floated that past, I guess, some of the party leadership over the past week, and there's been a lot of opposition. There's been some warming to the idea. I would say that if I were going to gauge the general feeling of the party on the feedback that I got, I would have to say that they're not going to be very supportive of that. A lot of people still like the endorsement process that the party provides and the extra push that it will give the endorsed candidate.
Mm-hmm. Dean Barkley, you had talked a lot about getting a real big name on the party ticket this year, a Tim Penny type
right.
Candidate. While all the candidates in the race may be good candidates and good people and everything, none of them are very well known. Are you disappointed that you weren't able to get the big name person on the ticket?
Well, I'm not disappointed. Obviously, I was a little frustrated. I did work on Tim a long time to try to get him to switch party identification and run. And obviously, Tim decided not to run, period. But it's been frustrating since the beginning of trying to get some of those big-name centrists to switch parties. They believe in what we're doing. They're supportive, but yet they're unwilling to make that leap of faith from their home base that they don't really feel very comfortable in into us. And that's always been frustrating. But I'm excited that we might have a very strong primary battle with more than one candidate. This will be the first time, hopefully, that we'll have more than one candidate in the Senate race. It's always been me. And I think it's positive for all three candidates, because what happens traditionally when you don't have a primary or you don't have a contest is that the party that does gets all the media exposure between now and the primary is over. And our candidates need name recognition. And the more exposure they can get because there's a contest, the stronger the candidate's going to be once they get out of the primary. So I like the idea that there might be a contested primary.
Party Chair McLuhan?
We do have three viable candidates with their own ideas, their own support base, their own concept of how government should be coming into our party. And I think that you can just see the dichotomy there that we have between the Independence Party and, for instance, the other two parties. Nobody was going to challenge Rod Grams in the Republican convention because Rod Grams is the chosen incumbent. And, I mean, they say that you never run against an incumbent. In the DFL party, I think their field still remains very wide open. The word that I've gotten on the street is that the DFL endorsement doesn't mean a great deal anymore. I think the focus is going to be on the Independence Party because we do have that ability to be somewhat unpredictable.
Mm-hmm. But the other side of that theory is that you want to have your party united behind the one candidate, kind of the Republican approach here. You have your incumbent senator, and there's no reason to have a bunch of challengers and a messy primary and so on. And while you get the media attention, you also, at some point, end up with the candidates kind of sniping at each other.
Well, no, we've got a different scenario in our party right now. I am firmly convinced that whoever wins the primary, there will be a united party behind them, including the governor. We've got different things, especially in a federal race where there is no public money. I mean, the Ventura race was different, where the vast majority of the money that we raised in that race came from some sort of public subsidy or a grant. In federal races, there is no money. I mean, you have to go out and scrape for every dollar. So getting exposure in the media is absolutely critical because we're going to have whoever the candidate is that wins is going to have far less money than either the Democrat or the Republican. So I think in our case, getting that exposure is absolutely essential to position our candidate to be able to be known to the public out there. So I think it's a different scenario because they aren't going to be able to buy it. They're not going to have $7 or $8 million to spend on media the last 6 weeks of the campaign. So I think their rules are a little bit different for us.
Mm-hmm. I have to ask you one other question before we get to our callers here about the Senate candidates. Mr. Davis has actually sued the governor. He's accused you, Dean Barclay.
Yeah, and don't forget me. I was mentioned in the lawsuit.
And the and the governor.
I think I was a defendant
of bribing this fellow not to run for governor in 1998. Would everybody be comfortable with him as your Senate candidate, given that history?
Everyone's entitled to their own opinion. I mean, that was an old story, and why Leslie decided to go around three or four on a dead horse, which had been investigated before, it was dropped before, and why he decided he wanted to do that only Leslie could say. But Leslie said he's putting it behind him. I'm a big person. I can put it behind me. Leslie is actually quite surprised me in the last month or so. He's actually putting on a pretty darn good fight for the delegates, and he's doing a darn good job. I mean, he's out there beating the bushes, having meetings. He's very articulate, and I'd never met Leslie Davis until I was at a candidate training school, and I sat next to him. That's the first time we'd actually ever met. So, no, you can put that behind you, but, I mean, Leslie has a big battle. Gibson, has been out there for a year. He's very well-liked in the party. He's been out beating the bushes. He's been going everywhere around the state. I've been watching his schedule, and that's the type of stuff he has to do.
Rick McLuhan, do you think the delegates will be able to put a aside Mr. Davis's fairly sharp criticisms of the governor over time and say, well, he'd make a good Senate candidate?
Well, my encouragement to the delegates, Gary, is that they evaluate the candidates based on the candidate's position on the issues. I think that we can always let a lot of personalities overwhelm the political process, but I really think that our delegates are going to be concerned with where the candidates are on the issues, what kind of a plan each individual campaign has for getting their message out to the voters. I think that Jim Gibson draws a lot of support from within the tried-and-true Reform Party. I think Leslie Davis has an opportunity to possibly bring new people into the party that haven't really looked at our platform and our party before. And I think that all of that is ultimately going to prove quite positive for the party.
We're talking Independence Party politics this hour here on Midday. Of course, tomorrow the party is having its state convention, and joining us today to talk about party business, Rick McLuhan, who is the state chair of the Independence Party. Dean Barclay has joined us. Mr. Barclay ran as a congressional candidate, Senate candidate. He was twice a Senate candidate. We lose track after a while.
So do I. I'm so grateful I'm not doing it again.
Campaign manager for Governor Ventura in 98 and currently head of the State Planning Department. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call here, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Wade, go ahead, please.
Yes, good morning. I wish I had an answer for this, but I'm very frustrated about the media's role in determining who is a viable candidate. I was very ashamed at the state of Minnesota and of media in general that barred Mr. Barkley from the debates when he was a very viable candidate. And I don't think we would have our current governor and administration if it weren't for the political blunder of Mr. Humphrey demanding that he be included in the debates. And, you know, what can we do to have a more realistic assessment of who is a viable candidate and change the power structure there somehow? And I'll hang up and take my answer off the air.
All right, gentlemen.
You know, Dean, my thought on that would be we have to somewhat change the political process. It's very true, I think, that the media has a significant impact on who is considered for a specific position and who's going to be a contender and who is not. But I think that our political process has been very supportive of the two-party system, essentially keeping the third party out. By doing that, I think that the third party's been deprived of some of the media attention in the past that obviously that tide has changed in Minnesota now.
You know, and obviously he pointed to my frustrations in my races. I mean, the history in 92, my congressional race, I was included in all the debates. In 94, I was including in none of the debates. I was out there protesting and creating a ruckus outside the doors. And then in 96, I was included in about half the debates. So, but I think maybe as far as the Independence Party goes, I think we may have crossed that hurdle. Because I do think that most of the debate sponsors now, the League of Women Voters, have clearly said that if you are a major party candidate, you're included in those debates. But those victories don't come easy. Then you talk, how about a grassroots candidate, a libertarian candidate that might be very bright and articulate. It's still very difficult for them. So it's an ongoing battle. What I suggest for those people who believe that there should be more candidates at those debates, they should find out who the debate sponsors are, which TV or radio stations are doing it, and call often and call early and let them know what your thoughts are, because they do respond to public pressure.
Mm-hmm. Looking back in 1998, do you think the governor would have been able to do as well in the debates had there been a full stage full of candidates? After all, there were far more candidates running than just the three, Coleman, Humphrey, and Ventura.
Would he have done as well? Maybe not, but I think he still would have stood out, and I think he still would have won those debates. I don't think if you would have had three or you would have had six on that stage, Jesse still has the ability to stand out, and I think he would have done equally well.
Mm-hmm. Fred, your question, please.
Yes, sir. My name, as you know, I'm sorry. I wanted to say I'm glad the Independence Party is formed. I'd like to know, first of all, where people such as myself who have not yet made a contribution could sit in contributions to the Independence Party. That's the first point. Secondly, I wanted to say I was glad that Buford Johnson is campaigning to run as senator for this party. Buford Johnson was an instructor when I was a student at Command General Staff College, and is a fine candidate. We are also members of a unit that drilled only for points. He's dedicated to service of our nation. I strongly support his candidacy. But what would be the address to send contributions to the Independence Party?
Mr. McClellan, by chance, do you have that address?
There you go, Rick.
Why do I have that address?
A softball
and why do we need
question.
The contributions? It's 113 Monroe Avenue in North Mankato, Minnesota, 56003.
Now, talking about money, I know you folks hope to get some legislators elected this fall. And as I understand it, Mr. McClellan, your target was, five state senators, 10 members of the House of Representatives. How in the world can you folks compete with the DFL and the Republican parties in these legislative races? They have a lot of money that they're going to be able to put into these legislative races. And frankly, in many cases, voters just don't really know the candidates very well. They don't have an opportunity to learn much about the candidates.
Gary, I learned how to campaign from the Republican Party. And I brought a lot of that knowledge and a lot of that expertise to the Independence Party. We've had some dynamic candidate training schools. We have provided a level of support for our initial surge of candidates in the form of these candidate schools and training that I think is second to none. And I think that our candidate and campaign support chair, Marjana Callery, deserves a lot of credit for what we've been able to produce. We are educating these people as to the political process. We're educating them as to how they need to campaign, how they need to engage their constituencies in their various districts. You couple that with the high caliber of individuals that we have coming to the Independence Party, and I think that people will be pleasantly surprised tomorrow when they see the caliber of our slate of state legislative candidates that have come to the forefront. We do have time to raise money in these candidacies, and these people are instituting the fundraising plans and programs that they need to, and they're also instituting the mission that they need to start at this point to get their message out. I am truly pleased with the caliber of candidates we'll be running this year, and I think in our targeted races we are going to enjoy some success because the people I've talked to in these various districts that are working on these campaigns, the constituents in some of these areas, have indicated a real willingness to change the political status quo.
But, Dean Barclay, you buck these odds, financial odds, and I would think it'd even be greater at a legislative level, given all the money that the parties, the other two major parties can pour into these races.
Actually, I think it's the opposite of what you're saying. When you're running for the U.S. Senate or Congress, you don't have the state campaign laws working in your favor. Our candidates can go out and get a $50 check, and the person who gets that money back from the state. You don't have that. You have spending limits in your congressional or in your legislative races that you do not have in the Senate races. And the public money that our candidates are going to get is quickly becoming almost the same as the Democrats and Republicans. So financially, I think our candidates are going to be in a much greater position to spend at least close to what the others are doing. And in a legislative race, it's not dominant on media buys. It's out there doing the grassroots effort, going in there and contacting. It's more retail at that local level. Now, I am concerned about the Montgomery ruling that basically blew the lid off of soft money that parties can do on multi-candidate expenditures. Ha ha, how they do that is I do believe that there's going to be a lot of dirty soft money poured into these races because there's so much at stake. I mean, if we could elect five or six legislators that would go over there and do battle with the governor next session, if they'd be the difference between the Democrats, Republicans being able to organize, and they'd have to go to that group of six people to be able to elect committee chairs, to elect a speaker, that would just completely change the dynamics over their next session. So if we could do that, you're going to see a whole different legislative process than we saw last year.
Let's get one more caller on here before we break for news. Judy Duffy's on the line, who's president of the League of Women Voters here in Minnesota. Morning, Ms. Duffy.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. Your comment?
Well, I just want to say what the League criteria for inclusion in our debates and clear up a discussion once and for all that our criteria are set by us. They're not set by a candidate. And in 1998, our debates included all the candidates, major party candidates, in our debates. And, of course, the criteria by which a party reaches major party status is something that we watch very closely so that we will have those candidates in our debates. So it could be as many as three or even maybe four this year.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And besides major party status, it's somebody who achieves 5% of a level of support in a nonpartisan poll. And that's a hard level to achieve, but candidates who work hard can do that. And as Mr. Barclay can attest to, it takes a while, but it does happen. So candidates who work hard, they organize their campaigns and reach that level of support, would have the opportunity to participate in one of our debates.
Okay. Well, thanks.
So just to set the record straight, these criteria are criteria and not those of any candidate. I wanted to make that very clear.
Okay, thanks for your clarification.
And, Gary, I'd like to say I wish the whole country would adopt the Minnesota League of Women Voters criteria because it's probably the fairest criteria in any state, and I wish the National Presidential Debate Commission would adopt that criteria. And I think maybe we'd have more than two people debating this this fall in the presidential race.
Hear, hear.
Dean Barclay and Rick McLuhan are with us. Mr. McLuhan is the chair of the Independence Party here in the state of Minnesota. Dean Barclay, former Senate candidate running under the Independence Party banner, actually it was the Reform Party at that time, former congressional candidate. He ran Governor Ventura's 1998 gubernatorial campaign, currently state planning director. They've come by today on the eve of the party's state convention to talk about Independence Party politics, and if you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2000. 800-228-2828. We'll get to some more callers here in just a couple of minutes.
NPR's Main Street Radio coverage of rural issues is supported by the Blandin Foundation, committed to strengthening rural communities and reducing violent activities through community-based programs in rural Minnesota.
All right, let's take a look at the total now. $2,180 still left to raise here. This is the last day of our special web week experiment, and frankly, it hasn't gone as well as we had hoped. The idea was to get as many of you to sign up online as possible so that we won't have to do so much on-air pledging next week as we come to the end of our fiscal year. As you know, you folks are the most important single source of funding for what you hear on this station in terms of programming. We really need you to get you on the rolls, new members, renewals, whatever your circumstance, additional contributions. We've got lots of nice thank you gifts. Last day to get in on the special early bird drawing. Somebody is going to win 100,000 Northwest Airlines frequent flyer miles. Might as well give yourself a chance. You don't even have to make a membership pledge to enter the drawing, but we hope you will. MPR.org. MinnesotaPublicRadio.org. Log on. If we can get another $2,100 in the kitty here by noon, we'll be on track and finish up this day where we should be. News headlines now. Here's Greta Cunningham. Greta?
Good morning, Gary. Attorney General Janet Reno is keeping quiet about the latest fundraising slap involving Vice President Gore. Reno refused to comment today on word that a Justice Department prosecutor has recommended a special counsel probe into whether Gore lied about his 1996 fundraising. The UN's top human rights official is upset about last night's execution in Texas of Gary Graham. Gary Robinson says the execution ran counter to widely accepted international principles. And she notes that Graham was put to death for a crime committed before he turned 18. Graham died by lethal injection last night. The coroner who examined the 58 illegal immigrants from China found dead in a truck this week in Britain says the immigrants died from carbon dioxide poisoning. He also says they frantically banged on the sides of the vehicle for help as the temperature soared inside the truck during the journey from Belgium. The coroner says the truck's air vent was closed for the trip, causing the victims to suffocate as oxygen ran out and carbon dioxide built up. The immigrants had been packed into the truck with boxes of tomatoes. The truck's driver has been charged with manslaughter and attempted smuggling, and five people have been arrested in connection with the incident. Two of the immigrants survived the five-hour trip. In regional news, Minnesota House Republicans are calling for some relief from high gas prices in Minnesota. GOP leaders today urged Governor Ventura to call a one-day special session next week to enact a state gas tax holiday. They want a temporary repeal of Minnesota's 20-cent-a-gallon gas tax from the 4th of July through Labor Day. Ventura has said he thinks suspending the state gas tax would be bad policy, but Ventura spokesman John Woodley says the governor needs time to review the Republican proposal. The forecast for Minnesota today calls for showers and thunderstorms likely. High temperatures today ranging from 65 in the north to 85 in the south. At this hour, Rochester reports fair skies and 70 degrees. St. Cloud, fair skies and 73. Skies are cloudy in Duluth and 62. And in the Twin Cities, partly cloudy skies, a temperature of 72 degrees. That's a look at the latest news.
All right. Thank you, Greta. It is about 25 minutes before noon. Before we get back to our conversation about Independence Party politics, we need to conduct a test of the emergency alert system. Well, apparently all went well. That was a test of the emergency alert system. Dean Barkley and Rick McLuhan are with us to talk about the Independence Party politics, this on the eve of their state convention tomorrow at the University of St. Thomas in St. Paul. Mr. McLuhan is state party chair. Mr. Barkley has represented the party in the U.S. Senate race twice, congressional race once, campaign manager for Governor Ventura in 1998. Currently state planning director. And again, if you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call here, 651-227-6000. That's our Twin City area number. Outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828. Mary, your question, please.
Yes, I have two questions. One is, does the Independence Party have a platform that you could tell me about? And also, I notice whenever I hear about the Independence Party, I rarely hear women or hear about women, and so I'm wondering where the women are.
Okay.
Thank you. I'll tell you, you can access our platform at www.eindependence, that's with a C-E on the end, .org. And our platform is located on our website. And I would probably characterize our platform as being fiscally conservative and socially inclusive. I think that we embody a lot of the moderate mainstream voters that we have in this state. As pertains to issues of gender differences within the party, we have a number of female candidates that will be running this year. We have Pam Ellison in the 4th Congressional District. Pam has been very active. She has garnered a lot of support from the volunteers in the 4th Congressional District. And I might add that I think if I were going to look at the delegate mix, we're probably pretty much 50-50 in terms of male versus female. We embrace people of all persuasions, ethnicities and backgrounds to come to our party. We have people that I would classify as being very staunch environmentalists. We have people who I would classify as very much fiscally conservative. And we embrace a lot of those different ideas and concepts within our party. We don't pass judgment on anyone because of one particular viewpoint that they might have on an issue that might not agree with the rest of us.
And I'd like to add that, you know, Rick's predecessor, party chair, was Diane Goldman, who was party chair for 2 years. She took over for me. So we've had female chairs of our party. And again, our endorsed congressional candidate in the 4th is a woman. A lot of our candidates are going to be, so I don't think that's an issue within our party.
Well, in terms of the setting aside the platform for a moment, it's probably fair to say that come this fall, especially with the legislative races, the Republican candidates are going to be out talking a lot about tax cuts, tax cuts, tax cuts. Democrats will be talking about, well, the need to have kind of a balanced approach, some tax cuts, but some investments, as they like to put it. Is there a simple message that the Independence Party candidates are going to be putting forward?
Let me address that, Gary. The Republican has controlled the House the last two legislative sessions. And let me say this. They've touted all of these tax cuts. In fact, they were taking credit for Governor Ventura's license tab fee reductions that he instituted this last legislative session. And I find it very interesting that on the one hand, the Republicans will try to pass tax cuts, yet on the other hand, they continually vote to increase spending. And I think that when one really looks at the dynamics of the state government, the legislature, how this spending is initiated, and how the legislative process works, one will then look to the people who are running on candidacies within the Independence Party and say, this is the difference. These are the people who are essentially going to take away the smoke and mirrors, and they're going to get to the root of the problem. Because
But what's the message, I guess, is the, if you had to summarize it in a few words, what's your message?
I'd throw it out there that we need to get some allies in the legislature for the governor to be able to get his agenda through. I mean, the governor, when it came to this last session, his message to the legislature was no supplemental spending. This is a bonding year. Go and get your bonding. That's what you're supposed to do. Then go away. Well, what did they do? They spent another $1.2 billion in additional spending. In the rate of growth in our budget went from 10.5%, which was a biennial rate, to 16.5% because the Republicans weren't even willing to go along with fiscal conservatism. So it's going to say the governor is a fiscal conservative. He wants to rein in the size of government, wants to make it responsible, and he needs some allies to help him get that agenda through. Because mm-hmm. right now he doesn't have any.
But the governor does argue that all legislators should be independent actors, that they shouldn't be answering to some caucus
message. Wouldn't that be nice?
I think it'd be great.
So what difference as a practical matter would it make to have Independence Party legislators if, in fact, they're kind of all going their separate ways, kind of doing what they think is best?
Well, I think the thing is the common bond that you will find within the Independence Party candidates is these are the people who are for good government. And they're also the people who will strive to build consensus within their own legislative districts and also within the legislature. I think the problem that you have over here is we spent 2.5 to 3 months doing essentially nothing, and then all of a sudden you had a dozen people from the two major party caucuses that called all the shots with regard to this spending. I don't think that that's a representative form of government. I don't think that any of our candidates feel that's a representative form of government. And that's what we're going to try to change this year.
Well, Gary, maybe those six or seven loyal Independence Party legislators could give the other ones the backbone to break away from the way they do business over there and join them in doing what they think is right, not necessarily what the caucus position is.
Phil, your question, please.
Yeah, in kind of in line with the previous call-in questioner, it seems to me almost by default the Reform Party is sort of the Libertarian Party light version, you know, where you're fairly liberal on personal liberty issues but fairly conservative on fiscal issues. So I'd like you to draw for me the line of difference between yourselves and the Libertarian Party.
Okay.
We do a correction, Independence Party. We used to be the Reform. There is another Reform Party now out there that is not us.
Exactly. I think that, you know, one can look at a lot of different aspects of our party, and everybody likes to attach labels. And I think that if you were going to look at our party, you could say that we have some definite libertarian leanings on the fiscal side. You could probably say that some of our issues lean towards the Green Party. I think that we are the one party that can be the homogenous party, that can be somewhat the fusion party, that's going to bring a lot of the smaller constituencies together. You don't have much of a party if you've got maybe 100 or 200 active members in the state of Minnesota. It's extremely difficult to cross that threshold. My hat's off to the people like Phil Madsen and Dean Barkley and Doug Friedline and Governor Ventura, who have been supporting this movement all along, and they have been able to grow it to the stage that we have become major players. And I think that along the way, we have taken some things from many different parties, many different constituencies that the founding members have brought on board, and that is what the form and function of our party is today.
I should ask about the governor and the party. He is, by all indications, wildly popular here in the state of Minnesota, and yet that hasn't seemed to been able to bestow that popularity on the party or the other candidates in the Independence Party. Why is that? Why hasn't he been able to transfer some of his magic?
You know, I think that when you look at the persona of Governor Ventura and the mission that he espoused during the campaign and also subsequent to his election, he indicated that we were electing him to be governor. He's not elected to essentially spend all of his time like governors and politicians past have in terms of doing the party business. The party leadership, my job, Gary, is to make certain that the party is true to its principles. We need to then provide support for elected officials like Governor Ventura to get that message out. One thing that we're criticized for occasionally by some of the other political parties is we're a one-trick pony, or we're a one-hit wonder, or we're a Jesse Ventura fan club. Well, if that's the case, I think that you really have to look at what this governor has brought to the state of Minnesota in terms of notoriety and exposure over the last 2 years. And I think that it's been very significant. What our challenge is in the Independence Party is being able to carve out a niche for our candidates that is simply going to build upon the door that Governor Ventura has opened for us.
And Gary, I said you cannot rely on one singular personality to build a party. Take a look what's happened to the National Reform Party with Perot. You can't do it that way. For any lasting party to be built, it's got to be built by the members themselves. And the governor says, I can assist you in getting to where you want to go, but the job is yours. He will weigh in on helping some candidates get elected. But we don't know that yet. We have not had an election, a general election, since the governor has been elected.
No, we've had some special elections.
Special elections, which are a different animal. I mean, they're a very short period. money dominated. That, but our candidates did better than they did before in the special elections. They almost doubled their performance. So I'm saying those naysayers who think, you know, that it was a flash in the pan of the social-only Jesse Ventura, wait and see. I mean, the challenge to our party is now is to elect some legislative people, hopefully maybe have a competitive U.S. Senate race, win that, and win a congressional seat or two, and we'll see what happens. I mean, everyone likes to write us off as soon as they think it's there. And I say, I've seen it before. We were written off in the governor's campaign. No one took it seriously until about 2 or 3 days before the election, and wait and see.
You know, and I think to take that a step further, Gene, we are going to be having a significant impact in some of these races because we're not out to be spoilers. We're out to be winners. And I think that the slate of candidates we have are definitely people that can qualify as winners. The thing is, though, we're going to have an impact in these races because where you used to have 52% to 48%, that whole percentage now is going to be skewed somewhat based on the credibility and the caliber of a candidate we run in a particular legislative seat. So I think that the pundits within the two major political parties are having a very difficult time even assessing what their chances are going to be. And I think it's interesting, Dean, that a lot of these people have essentially said, well, these guys don't have a chance to pick up a seat, and they haven't even looked at our slate of candidates yet. And I think that speaks to the arrogance that we see with the two major political parties in the state of Minnesota.
Isn't it true, though, when Independence Party people get together in the quiet, away from the media, aren't you folks a little disappointed? After the governor was elected, there was a lot of talk that a real big-time third-party movement had been launched, and not just launch, that's even the wrong word. That,
yeah, are we going national in our perspective here?
We're talking national and statewide, for that matter. I mean, there was a genuine sense that, well, you probably had a reasonable chance to win the Senate race, put up big numbers in the presidential race, score really big victories in the legislative races, and that doesn't seem to have happened.
No, I'll take that one on. I think the highlight was the Dearborn Convention that we had last summer when out of the blue Jack Gargan came and basically did a coup of the pro faction of the National Reform Party when their candidate, Ms. Benjamin, was defeated, and Russ Burning, their group, basically got their lunch handed to them. And we didn't do a whole lot. I mean, Governor Ventura endorsed Jack, and only met him once, talked to him on the phone. And there I think we had a sign. We had someone that actually was going to build this party from a neutral aspect. And then what happened after that was really sad. It basically set things back. There's no doubt about it that what's going on now with the fight with Buchanan and these Perot people and Vernie, they're fighting with each other, has really put that party, I think, where it ceases to be a major factor. Or if it hasn't yet, it will after this presidential election. That's why we broke. That's why the state party broke when it did, because we saw what was happening to that national party, and we were not going to go down with it because we didn't represent what they were all about. And it may take longer in the national scene. Yes, I think we could have won a presidential race. I think the sea was right. If we'd gotten the right candidate, that we could have won the presidential race. I think things were poised to be a whole lot different, but we've had setbacks before. And that's why we go back. We're concentrating on the state of Minnesota. We're going to show what can be done here. That's why we're concentrating on our local races. And quite frankly, we don't care what happens nationally right now.
You know, and the other thing you have to look at, Gary, is let's just talk simply from a financial standpoint. The other parties are very well entrenched. They have very loyal and dedicated support bases. We've been creating this support base for a mere 8 years. And I think that when you look at the big scheme of things, we're not doing too badly in terms of the impact we've already had. So I will look at the glass and say that it's half full at this point, because I think that we have had these setbacks that we've gone through by being affiliated with the national party. Now we're essentially Minnesota focused. However, we aren't recipients of the special interest money that the other parties are. We aren't recipients of the caucus staffs that are over at the legislature, whose sole responsibility is to make sure that the incumbents keep winning elections. I think when you look at the resources, the third party does have some real hurdles to overcome, but I don't think they're insurmountable in the least.
Let's get at least one more caller on here before we wrap up. Amy, quick comment, please.
Hi, I'm Amy, and I live in Minneapolis, and I've been an Independence Party delegate for about 2 years now, and I'm in full support of James Gibson's campaign, and every other delegate I know is also. He's got some really unique foresight looking at the future. He calls it intergenerational justice, and I really like him. Thank you.
Okay. Well, he is Dean Barclay, I suppose, the odds-on favorite to be endorsed tomorrow. Is that correct? Or
I'd say, from what I can see, he's by far the favorite to it, and I love his intergenerational message. It sounds a lot like mine in 96 and 94 and 92.
What do you know about intergenerational
messages? Well, I'm getting older, so I know all about it now. There's a big gap. Rick, I was talking to Gary earlier, don't be surprised that if there are more than three in the Senate race. We're always a party of surprises. I can't say who it is, but I've heard that there's another person thinking about this race. So between now and filing period, this might be a four-person Senate race, which will make it even more exciting.
If there's just one endorsed candidate that comes out of the convention, would you still encourage other people to get in for the primary?
Well, I don't need to encourage. It's other people. I mean, I'm a party person. I'll support the endorsed candidate. I really am interested in this alternative, though, is that if there are more than one qualified candidate that meets our criteria, of at least taking a look at maybe we could have more than one endorsed candidate who we believe would represent the state level. But we won't find that out till tomorrow.
I think that'll lead to some spirited debate tomorrow. And I think that it's always good to debate ideas because I can change my mind on positions that I might have held for years and years. And I think that's the one thing about our party that is somewhat unpredictable. It does make us the party to watch because we're willing to think outside the box and embrace new ideas.
And, Mr. McLuhan, before we wrap up, I understand you've pretty well ruled out the idea of endorsing any candidates for the judicial elections in Minnesota, right?
Well, Gary, I will be proposing a resolution tomorrow essentially denouncing what a couple of other parties have done in Minnesota, and that is try to take partisan politics and interject it into the judiciary. I think that's folly. I think it makes no sense whatsoever to politicize that branch of government.
And tomorrow, the state convention, it's just for delegates, or can anybody
show up and watch and
see
what we're all about? It'll be fun. It's not going to be a two-day event. It's going to be hopefully done is it 4 o'clock, Rick?
By 4 o'clock, we should be done and out of there. And actually, that's one thing the media and the press love about us is we aren't going to make people listen to 2 days of a lot of tired debates and a lot of tired issues. Okay. We already had our platform convention back in November, so we've accomplished
St. Thomas College, that's where we're going to have it.
And what time does it begin?
10 a.m.
10 a.m.? Mm-hmm. And will there be balloons and funny hats?
No, I think we're fiscal conservatives.
We only drop one balloon at our parties, Gary. That's it. We are fiscally conservative.
Thanks, gentlemen. Appreciate you joining us. We're out of time.
Take care.
State Independence Party Chair Rick McLuhan and Dean Barclay, former Senate candidate representing the Independence Party, Governor Ventura's former campaign manager. He's a former state party chair, and he's currently the director of the State Planning Agency. Talking Independence Party politics on this first hour of Midday.
We just looked at the numbers, and our budget manager has just fainted. She can't believe how far we need to go before the end of June. I've tried to calm her and tell her our listeners will come through. They always do, but she's not convinced. Only you can convince her with your new or renewing membership. If you received a membership notice in the mail, please mail it in right away or click and join online at mpr.org.
Yeah, a special mention here about that clicking and joining online. Altogether need about 7,400 listeners to join or renew in order to reach our fiscal year-end goal on June 30th. That's kind of the big year-end goal, but today we have a very special goal, trying to make sure that we get enough of you signed up online so we don't have to belabor you next week with a lot of on-air pledging. Your membership support is critical to the success of Minnesota Public Radio. We still need to raise about $2,100. Log on and sign up, minnesotapublicradio.org, or if you prefer, mpr.org. Do it right now, and let's get you added to the tally.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday.
It's the 23rd of June, 2000. It's the birthday of novelist David Levitt, born in Pittsburgh, 1961. He went to Yale, and during his senior year there, his first story, Territory, was published in the New Yorker magazine, the first story that magazine ever printed that featured explicitly homosexual characters. Author of other collections, novels, Family Dancing, The Lost Language of Cranes, and his most recent, the novel The Page Turner, which came out 2 years ago. David Levitt, who objected to being called a gay writer, saying it was a form of ghettoizing, of saying that now the work will only be read by gay people. It's the birthday of conductor James Levine, born in Cincinnati, 1943. He came from a musical family. His father was a violinist and led a dance band. His grandfather was a cantor in a synagogue. Young James played the piano as a small child, but always wanted to be a conductor. And when his parents took him to hear the Cincinnati Orchestra and Opera, the boy sat with an open score on his lap and a knitting needle in his right hand, with which he conducted. By the time he was 9, he was producing his own operas at home with a record player and a puppet stage. Went to the Juilliard School of Music, completed the 5-year program in 2 years, served as assistant conductor in Cleveland, and then went to the Metropolitan Opera, where he has been since 1986, artistic director. It's the birthday of choreographer Bob Fosse, born in Chicago, 1927. In the 50s, danced and acted on Broadway, and then won a Tony Award as a choreographer for his first musical, The Pajama Game. Directed Sweet Charity, How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, and the films Cabaret and All That Jazz. It's the birthday of mathematician Alan Turing, born in London, 1912, who during World War II helped break the German Enigma code, which allowed the Allies to attack Nazi submarines and disrupt their supply system. He committed suicide in 1953 after being prosecuted for homosexuality, which at that time was still illegal in Britain. A play about Turing's life, Breaking the Code, was produced about 12 years ago. It's the birthday of researcher Dr. Alfred Kinsey, born in Hoboken, 1894, author of Sexual Behavior in the Human Male, a bestseller in 1948. And it's the birthday of the Russian poet Anna Akhmatova, born near Odessa, Ukraine, 1888. After her husband was executed for taking part in an anti-Bolshevik plot, she burned many of her poems and did not write down her new ones, but memorized them. Here's a poem for today, lines from William Blake's poem, Milton. And every space that a man views around his dwelling place, standing on his own roof or in his garden, on a mount of 25 cubits in height, such space is his universe. And on its verge the sun rises and sets, the clouds bow to meet the flat earth and the sea in such an ordered space. The starry heavens reach no further, but here bend and set on all sides, and the two poles turn on their valves of gold. And if he move his dwelling place, his heavens also move where'er he goes, and all his neighborhood bewail his loss. Such are the spaces called earth, and such its dimension. Lines from William Blake's poem, Milton. That's the Writer's Almanac for Friday, June 23rd, made possible by 21NorthMaine.com, where book lovers find more than 10 million used, rare, and antiquarian books on the web at 21NorthMaine.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Regional broadcasts of the Writer's Almanac are supported by Marquette Banks, your community bank, offering a broad range of financial services for your business and personal needs.
Vice President Al Gore, Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura at Hopkins North Junior High, We'll have tape from yesterday's activities coming up after the news.
Tonight on Word of Mouth, the photos of Wing Young Huey, the plans for the Loring Playhouse, and the Lake Superior Big Top Chautauqua rises from the ashes. And the roundup, tonight at 6.
You're listening to Minnesota Public Radio. We have a partly cloudy sky, 72 degrees at KNRW FM 91.1.